You're listening to A Conduit's Diary. This is a podcast about me, Rachel, and my experiences as I investigate paranormal activity as a conduit. This is rated R for explicit because I do have a little bit of a foul mouth. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe and rate this podcast wherever you listen to it. And now, on to episode 46, Stairway to Nowhere. Is this going to become a common thing? I asked Harry. It was an unseasonably cold April morning. April is usually when Phoenix decides to creep into the high 80s and low 90s, flirting with the hundreds by the end of the month. Instead, today was cooler, with the high only reaching 65. This was the weather I preferred: a light jacket, jeans, and a copious amount of sunblock, but limited sweating. Harry wore entirely too many layers, a sure sign that he was born and raised in Phoenix. I saw it in my sister, who miraculously didn't burn, but instead tanned in the oppressive sun. She was often seen in the middle of a particularly hot day, lounging in the sun with a Diet Coke, like it wasn't hell on earth. "Hopefully not," Harry grumbled, pulling his jacket tighter against his body. To be fair, we weren't really in Phoenix anymore. I didn't realize he took cases outside of Phoenix, but here we were, trudging into the wilderness of Flagstaff. Heading to Flagstaff made me think of Holly and her elk beast. See, episode 25, The Edge of the World. And I was none too interested in heading into the forest. If it clung to her, it would definitely cling to me. All supernatural beings could smell me from a mile away. The drive to Flagstaff was filled with uncomfortable silence. I was reminded of my mother's easygoing nature and her ability to make small talk with a rock if necessary. I wasn't so lucky. After the typical cordial, "Wow, I love the decorations," I tended to jump right into, "Okay, so why do you need a paranormal specialist?" Harry, thankfully, wasn't keen on speaking either. He put on a podcast about personal growth and being your own boss that made me want to vomit. It was the type of stuff Hema loved to listen to, filled with affirmations. I was far from a go-getter. The fact that I could buckle down and be a bajillionaire only made me anxious and nauseous. Unlike my sister, I had no grand plans to own a mansion and be the best at anything. Being the best conduit is far from something to brag about, or even want. I watched the thermometer drop from 50 to 40 to 32 as we headed north on the I-17 to Flagstaff. Overall, it was only a 2 or so hour drive, and the drive itself wasn't awful. Phoenix is a valley, and as you head out of it and climb into the mountains to the high desert, and then finally to the forest. Plus, at some point you edge around Sedona, and there's nothing quite as beautiful as the Red Rocks. Unfortunately, the energy is a little too much for someone like me, and I tend to spend my time in Sedona nursing a headache. Once in Flagstaff, we took several turns here and there until we ended up in a dirt lot on the side of the road. There was a low fence that was missing a portion of it, big enough to let two people pass through with ease. "You gonna bury me in the woods, Harry?" I asked him, unable to keep the anxiety from my voice. He rolled his eyes and opened the door to exit his ugly sports car, cursing under his breath at the fact that its low clearance meant he probably hit a rock or two. "This is the last known location of Dylan Everby," he said, matter-of-factly. I had no idea who that was, and told him as much. "Of course not. He's just some 20-something college student that went missing. His phone shows his last known location in these woods. Figured if he was, you know," he made an exaggerated face to imply death, "you'd know." "Wonderful. We get to journey into a forest to find a body. I'm glad I ate hours ago, and that the likelihood of me puking on an active crime scene was pretty low." "How long ago did he go missing?" I asked, following Harry as he headed into the woods and through the cut gate. About 2 weeks. He's not the first, he added over his shoulder. What? I asked, pushing a random branch of a pine tree out of my face. The minute we disappeared under the canopy of trees, the temperature dropped another 10 degrees, and I pulled my hood over my ears for some protection. The forest was eerie and silent, without even the sound of wind through the leaves. My shiver wasn't entirely from the cold. If Harry noticed, he said nothing, grumbling again as he fished gloves from his pocket. How anyone can live like this is beyond me, he said. People say the same of us in the valley, I reminded him. He shrugged. It's only like 4 or 5 months of heat. Exactly, I replied. Anyway, Dylan isn't the only person to go missing in Flagstaff. I know, it's a big enough town, but there's something they all have in common. All of the missing people are in their early 20s and go missing every 3 months, like clockwork. Can you trace them all to this forest? I asked. He shook his head. We got a lucky break with Dylan. His parents are real tyrants. They're the ones that hired me when the cops didn't find him in 48 hours. They have all these parental controls on his phone, including geolocation. If he goes outside of a certain perimeter, they're alerted. They've known his every move for the last 2 years he's been at NAU. All of a sudden, I was thankful for my mother's laissez-faire style of raising Stephanie and I. Far from absent, but far from using my phone as a personal tracking device. And this is his last known location? I asked, looking around the forest. It looked exactly like the forest where we entered, and I was sure we were going to get lost. Dying in the cold of Flagstaff wasn't on my list of things to do. Around here, another half mile into the forest. They showed me the data. He'd never been here before, not even in the area. He wasn't a hiker. If anything, he was more of a gamer. He liked some games about the afterlife or something. Also, not a big social butterfly, no known girlfriends as far as they knew. What about boyfriends? I asked. Harry gave me a look over his shoulder. I don't ask questions that parents don't want to know the answers to. I saved those questions for his friends, and they said there was someone in his life. Someone he was trying to impress by taking them to see cool places in Flagstaff that weren't well known. Well, there you go. We find the date. Case closed, I told him. To be honest, the forest was growing more and more unsettling, and not because of the thought of Holly's elk friend. I could feel the telltale signs of the paranormal on the air. It settled on my tongue like a film and made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. It was like that sensation some people felt before they got hit by lightning or before they had a seizure. The impending knowledge that something was coming and there wasn't much you could do to stop it. The date doesn't exist, at least not that we could find. We have nothing on them. Gender, name, how they met. The police scoured his computer and it's super encrypted. It wiped itself when they tried to break in. Even his phone was a bust. Turns out his parents hadn't quite figured out how to field his texts or calls. The phone company takes a few weeks to get back to us, so we don't have much. I figured, missing for 2 weeks in the cold forest, dead. You were faster. Jesus, I thought I was morbid. Well, I hate to prove you right, but there's something paranormal out here, I told him. Of course there is, Harry muttered. This way, I told him, nodding to a small path that led off the larger one we'd been traveling on. He raised his eyebrows but didn't argue. I think he knew by now not to question my spidey senses. I followed the urge at the base of my sternum, feeling a pull toward the unknown. The ground sloped down and there, at the bottom of a slope, stood a staircase. It wasn't just any staircase. The stairs were old and made of stone, covered in weeds and fungus. I wouldn't have been surprised to find remnants of a cabin in the dead foliage around them, except there was nothing. The ground was wet, unlike the dry dirt higher up the slope. The steps were worn with time and countless steps. Oh, cool, Harry said, hopping down into the clearing. I love finding old abandoned sites in the forest. There's one at Oak Creek that's right on the river. At West Fork, it's... He paused at the base of the steps, the words dying on his lips. His eyes trailed up the stairs, his jaw suddenly slack. He lifted his left foot, as though he was about to ascend the steps. Oh, fuck no. Harry may be a good 70 pounds heavier than me, but adrenaline does something to a person. I barreled into him with the full force of my body, knocking him over and breaking his line of sight with the steps. "What the fuck, Rachel?" he hissed from the ground, shoving me off him. "You're about to walk up the steps," I told him, brushing the dirt off me. "You're welcome." "They're just stairs," he said, his gaze returning to them. "Yeah, and you suddenly blanked out and tried to climb them. Just do me a favor and stand back. And if I start to climb them and look like I'm in La La Land, please grab me." Harry didn't respond, just grumbled to himself as he stood. I circled the stairway, trying to piece together what it might be. I'd seen fairy circles, and this wasn't one. There was no circle. Well, unless you counted the small clearing the staircase sat in, but chances are that existed well after the stairs. I reached out to touch the air over the staircase, finding that my fingers dipped into the other side. They came away covered in that thick purple gunk I'd been feeling from the other side lately. "What the hell is that?" Harry asked, disgusted. "It's a portal," I told him, shaking the goo off. Once it touched the ground in our world, it dissolved with a hiss. That was new. "A portal?" Harry echoed. "A portal," I agreed, finishing my circle of the stairs and pausing at the base. I was hesitant to look into it, but I knew I had to. My gaze traveled up one step at a time, noticing a ripple as the steps ascended. At the second step, it was barely visible, but by the fourth step, the ripple looked like heat waves coming off a parking lot in the summer. The top step, step 10, was barely visible beneath the gyrating energy on the ground. At the top of the steps, only visible from the base, was a trap door. If someone ascended the staircase, they'd fall through it and into whatever part of the other side it led to. "Are you going to go through it?" Harry asked. "Are you fucking nuts? No way. If this is where the kids are going missing, it means it's meant to be a one-way portal. If I get trapped there, I'm going to be super pissed." "What now, then?" Harry asked. "I don't know. Can you scour the internet to see if this location is listed? Is it on some website about creepy places in Flagstaff? How did Dylan know about it? Or did he stumble on it?"
"I highly doubt anyone is stumbling on this," Harry told me with a frown.
I nodded my agreement. This was way off the beaten path and not on a known trail system. Whoever came here did so with intent.
"So Dylan's phone just cut off here?"
Harry nodded.
"Yeah, GPS isn't super accurate. It puts him about this spot."
"So you don't see his spirit?"
I shook my head, eyeing up the portal. "No, I don't. But I have a feeling that if he climbed those stairs, he's as good as dead." Harry didn't like my answer. He liked finality. Bodies. Proof of life or death. That meant he got paid.
"What now?" he asked, even more angry.
For what it was worth, he was intently staring anywhere but the staircase as he crossed the clearing to the slope back to the main trail. It looked like it physically pained him to look away. "Easy. We find who led Dylan here. Only one person went missing. That means whoever took him here is still alive. Are they alive because the portal only allows one person at a time? Or because they purposely brought him here?" I asked.
Harry grinned at me. "Look at you, little detective. Where do we start?"
"I can help you," came a voice from near the base of the stairs. I spun around, shocked at the sight of a ghost, peering around the stairs. They snuck up on us, likely because the energy of the stairs overpowered my typical ability to sense the paranormal.
"What? What's going on?" Harry asked, staring at the base of the steps.
"Someone who claims they can help," I told Harry, watching the figure carefully. A ghost at the base of a portal to the other side, where people potentially disappear into? Not exactly something I'd trust immediately.
"I can help," the ghost insisted, taking a step toward us.
They looked like a typical college kid at NAU. Hiking pants, worn hiking shoes, a vintage band t-shirt, and a hat. Her hair was braided, resting on her left shoulder. She had wide, expressive eyes and a smattering of freckles across the bridge of her nose. She couldn't have been more than 20, though the older I get, the younger everyone around me looks.
"What's her name?" I asked. "Geraldine. Everyone calls me Jerry, though," she told me. "Geraldine, nice to meet you. I'm Rachel, and this is Harry," I said. Next to me, Harry flinched, and I glared at him. "It's fine to give them your name. Chill out," I told him. "Geraldine Duran?" he asked, staring very near to where she stood. The corners of her lips turned up in a sad smile. "That's me," she said. "She said that's her," I told him. He shook his head, scrubbing his hand through his hair. "She went missing 3 years ago, unsolved. Avid hiker, though thought she may have gone missing on a trail. She's on my list of possibilities," he told me. "Possibilities?" I asked. "Possibly related to this whole thing. She's not on the police radar with the others. It's my own research," he told me.
"You said you could help us. How?" I asked.
She squinted at Harry, then at me.
"Can he not see me?" she asked.
I shook my head. "Just me."
"Well, okay. You're looking for Mikey Anders. That's the guy who took me here," she said confidently, crossing her arms over her chest.
"She said Mikey Anders took her here," I told Harry. He shook his head, making Geraldine frown.
"Really? He's not even a suspect?"
she scoffed, shaking her head in annoyance.
"Of course. I guess no body, no crime, right?"
"You have our attention now. Harry is a private investigator. He works with the police, but he's also independent. If you can tell us what happened, then we can get him," I offered. Harry shot me a look, which I knew was his way of telling me not to promise anything to the dead. He was superstitious and was convinced if he somehow didn't help a ghost, it would haunt him for the rest of his days.
I may have been part of why he thinks that. "Mikey is a local tour guide. He does all sorts of tours. He's like a Flagstaff expert. He does hiking tours and downtown tours, ghost tours. I knew him through friends, since I'm a big hiker. I wanted to know if he knew any cool trails that I didn't. The locals are particular about sharing some of the lesser known areas, leave no trace and all. They also gatekeep from people like me, who like to solo hike. It's not like I'm going to post it all over social," she rolled her eyes. "I'm not like an influencer, I just like hiking. Anyway, I met up with him and told him what I was looking for. He asked some questions about me. I kind of thought he was hitting on me. He wanted to know about my family, my living situation, if I had a boyfriend. I figured he was testing me, you know, to make sure I wasn't just trying to get clout or something. He told me to meet him at a coffee place, name redacted, so we could go together. I figured I could trust him since we had mutual friends and I knew people who'd gone on private hikes with him before. I walked there since it's close to my apartment. He parked off the side of the road that led down the trail and then..." She trailed off, opening her arms to the spot we now stood in. "She says he drove her here after an interview. He's a local guide," I told Harry. "Interview?" Harry asked, considering.
"Yeah, she thought it was to make sure she wasn't like a social media person who'd post secret places and ruin them for people. You know how they had to close down Grand Falls because it was getting trashed? They tried to prevent that."
"But what did he ask specifically?" Harry pressed.
"She said about her family, she had a boyfriend, stuff like that."
"So if anyone would know she was missing?"
Harry asked. Geraldine rubbed her forehead at the realization, scrunching up her face. "That makes no sense. Someone had to know you were meeting him for a hike," I told her. She shook her head.
"Not really. I had some friends, but we weren't super close. Not close enough for me to tell them like everyday updates. I don't have Facebook or Instagram. There was really no one who knew I was gone."
She trailed off with a sigh.
"Geraldine was off the grid. That's why people didn't make the connection. She didn't quite fall into the pattern because it took about a week to notice she was gone," Harry said. I shot him a glare. Geraldine covered her mouth to hide a sob.
"But you can help us now," I told her, trying to comfort her as best as I could.
"You'll be the one who stops him at last, and we'll make sure he knows."
Harry shot me another look about promises, but Geraldine appeared satisfied, nodding.
"He comes every third new moon," she said quietly. "He brings them here, and all he has to do is show them the staircase. Once you're at the bottom step, it's game over. I've seen it over and over again. Watch them walk up the steps and disappear." But not you? I asked her. She shook her head, looking sheepish. I fell. I made it to the third step when I slipped on something, fell, and... Oh, I said quietly. She nodded. He buried me over there, she said, nodding to a group of trees just beyond the clearing. Every third month I try to trip someone or get their attention, but no one can see me. I don't know where they go, but they just don't stick around like I do. You're lucky, I told her softly, glancing up the staircase again. The trap door rippled, catching the sun like a prism. It's a one-way door to some place you'll never come back from. Why? She asked. I don't think I want to know, I told her. It was a lie. I wanted to know. Badly. How long had it been here? Who built it? Where does it lead? And what does it feed? That's what this was. A pipeline to powering something. The new moon, the location in the woods. None of it was a coincidence. Unfortunately, the arrest of Mikey Anders would mean no way of knowing. Unless Harry could get it out of him. I relayed the rest of the conversation to Harry, who glanced at the spot where her body sat, warily. She's over there? He asked. I nodded. Well, we need to shut this portal down before we bring the coroner here. Got any ideas? He asked me. I considered the portal, circling it slowly again. This time, I was looking for specific things. Items that didn't belong. Words etched into the stone. Dried blood. To open a portal to the other side, it took a series of steps. One, acts of violence. Likely the first death opened it, but it needed something to sustain it. If not an act of violence, a willing sacrifice would do. Either someone sacrificed themselves or someone else to open the portal. Two, to keep it open, it needed to be held open. This could be done a number of ways, depending on how big the portal needed to be. This one was specific, and I suspected it was enter only because things weren't crawling out of it. Three, it needed to be fed to stay open. One death or sacrifice wasn't enough to hold it open infinitely. The power would fade. The deaths happened like clockwork, but they couldn't all go to whoever was waiting on the other side. To disrupt it, you either stop feeding it or find what kept it open. Until Anders was in jail, it would continue to be fed, so now it came down to finding what kept it open. It took a little bit of hunting, but I found some things at last. A word was scratched into the stone I didn't recognize, so I took a picture of it, then picked up a rock to scratch it off. The portal wavered, but remained. Next, I moved around the stones that surrounded the base of the staircase. It was smart to hide the totems amongst the common items, making it harder to find. Want help? Harry asked, unwilling to move back into the clearing. Between the dead body, the ghost, and the staircase that tried to kill him, he was rightfully wary of the entire situation. I don't think you can, I called back, picking up a lava rock that caused the portal to ripple again. I tossed this out of the clearing, watching the portal ripple again as it landed well out of the clearing. With nothing else left to do, I started to dig, first with the toe of my shoe, and then with my hands. By the time I found the last buried item, I was sweating in my layers. The sun hadn't peeked through the trees, but the forest floor was still cold, but I felt warm from being so near the portal. There, buried at the base of the stairs, was a coin. I didn't recognize the writing on the coin or the symbols, so I took a picture of this on my phone as well and pocketed it. Once it was removed, the portal snapped shut with an audible bang. Harry jumped, clearly having heard it. What the hell was that? He asked, looking around the clearing. The portal is closed, I told him with a grin. My fingers felt warm from where they touched the coin and the rock, like I'd put my hand too close to a fire and pulled away just before I burned. Geraldine waved to us as we left the clearing. Geraldine's body was recovered that night, thanks to Harry. They also found a pile of items in the area that were buried that tied the site to other missing people, including Dylan. It wasn't long to trace the timeline back to Mikey Anders as the last person to see a lot of them alive, mostly because of Harry.
I'm not sure how he got the police to listen or make the arrest, but that's why he was the PI and I was the ghost lady. I tried to get Harry to interview Mikey himself and figure out more about the portal. Unfortunately, he was now a wanted serial killer, and even the PI that helped crack the case wasn't able to corner him. The trial is set in a few months, and I'm not sure if I want to know about it or not. Instead, I'm left with three things: a word etched into a rock, a coin, and a lava rock. How does this tie into the portal? I found myself really wishing my mom was alive.
A Conduit's Diary is created by me, written and produced by me, mixed horribly and edited by me. Cover art created by BMC Design on Fiverr. Music, intro and outro, created by Chris Hornberger.